Hey guys, what's going on? This is Brian Murphy from One Time Mountain, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout with Max Bowen.
Rock on.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Great to have you here. I'm your host, Max Bowen.
And I'm Curtis Hughes. Max, how's it going, pal?
Curtis, man, it's going really good because we get to talk to an old friend of the show. You last heard him on a couple years ago talking about his Chiasm series. And now we're talking about, Super Wicked White Cell Squadron.
Say it again?
The Super Wicked White Cell Squadron, issue 2, in the works. Comic creator, writer, Doug Knight joins us. Doug, welcome back to the show, man. It's great to have you here.
It's cool to be back, dude. Thanks for accepting my message.
Of course, man. Of course. So, man, let's just start off by just talking about what this series is all about.
Sure. So it's just a really easygoing all ages book. It's to do that thing where you have to like combine it and refer to a bunch of things that people are familiar with. Easy Asleep is Power Rangers meets Captain Planet. Really, I say that so that when I'm like telling it, giving the spiel at a table, like I'm talking to the parents and the kids, so I can say like it's like Power Rangers, the kids' eyes like light up, and I'm like, and like Captain Planet, and the kid has no idea what that is, but the parents instantly get excited too. So it's it's just like a really cool, like inclusive Sentai book that I've developed to distribute to children's hospitals. It calls on a lot of medical imagery that I've dealt with, and I also kind of took the opportunity to name the characters in it after doctors that had positive impacts on me as a kid and as an adult. It's just super bright, super colorful. Last year for the issue 1 campaign, I got a coloring book made up by a bunch of friends from lesser known comics and surrounding areas, so it's just like a really cool activity book that they were able to distribute the hospitals as I sent the books out. And the White Cell Squadron is just, super bright, super colorful, super lighthearted. It was my opportunity to write and not cuss and, draw mechs punching monsters and, tell a little bit more of my story. And, the fun part about it is that it's something that's so open-faced that, like, say Netflix wants to buy it. Or like whatever opportunity comes my way in the future with it, it's easy enough that I can pass it off to somebody because I know everybody who represents it is going to do it the same way they represent Transformers or any other major property. It's just like it's something that you can lovingly dedicate your time and attention to. So that issue 1, just real basic, caper happens. They got to intercept the big bad monsters. They fight a bunch of little monsters, turns into a big monster, and they got to call in the big robot. So the robot's called the MRI, which stands for the Enormous Mechanical Assault Robot Interceptor Class. To stay in the vein of action figures with super long names. There's a cliffhanger at the end of it, leads you into issue 2. Issue 2 picks up where it left off, and then, more calamity, more giant monster rumble. It kind of hits a little bit more personal with some references to kids that like undergo 24 months of treatment and stuff like that, just to kind of rein it in for the feel good and the relatability to the kids that are in the hospital that might be reading. And then wraps it up with a nice tight bow, which allowed me to also print the volume 1, which is like a super hardy 70-page saddle stitch with some bonus art, and it's really rounding out like a really cool all ages offering for my table.
Very cool, man. Reading the title, I can definitely tell that you grew up in like the Power Rangers era, because the name, like,
yes,
I
sir.
Read the Super Wicked White Cell Squadron, like that is absolutely like giant robots punching Rita Repulsa in the face and so on and so forth. So I'm gonna guess that this kind of stuff really like inspired the overall design and story.
Yeah, big time. So when I was, little guy, I spent way too much time watching TV, like eyeball to screen because of my visual impairment. And so back in the days of terrestrial programming, when you had to wait for your next episode and commercial breaks and, the things that kids these days don't understand.
What with their streaming services and their downloads.
Yeah, like, exactly. They
will never know the peril of hearing a sibling saying, "It's coming back on," and making that mad dash back to the living room just so you don't miss anything.
Yeah, or the fights over the converter while your favorite shows are on at the same time. There is some definite bruises caused in my house when I was a kid.
Yep.
So tying it all back, you know, when I was in the hospital, I got a wish. So I wished to meet the Power Rangers when I was a little guy. So I got to fly out to California and meet the original cast. And like, it was, you know, very formative for my childhood. But one of the emphasis points for the story's origin was when I was a little dude. At the time, the hospital that I went to, SickKids, was a very, like, their oncology floor was small. It was pre-upgrade. It was like a hospital. Now you go there and it's like a state-of-the-art facility that they put all the money and time and love into, and kids are still going through crap, but they've got a way more comfortable experience. But back then, the like hallways were so narrow that it was like, you know, Mr. Douglas Knight to the IV room. And you could just hear the, you know, the scream and the freak out. So one day I was sitting down in the chair and I was getting my IVs, and my mom, you know, she looked at me because she was at her wit's end, and she said, "Hey, you know the White Ranger?" And you know, I look up. Yeah. She goes, "Just imagine they're sending a whole bunch of White Rangers into your body to fight the monster that's trying to destroy your brain." And like something about that clicked in terms of relatability to me. And so, you know, I thought about the idea of like waving that same flag and you know, literally taking what my mom gave me and then, you know, externalizing it into just really fun and easy to reach characters and, you know, and easy to understand package, you know, like everybody gets the Sentai, everybody gets the group of people wearing cool armor, ready to fight, you know, ambiguous villains. And, you know, I think that in the art of creating a children's book or an all ages title, like there's a lot of funny stuff in here for adults and teenagers and, you know, anybody that's just got 5 minutes to kill. But it's the art of not making the brain work harder than it has to and still delivering on an entertaining experience.
I feel like we just buried the lead a bit. You met the actual Power Rangers as a kid, dude?
Dude, so a fact that my wife won't let me forget is that at the tender age of 6, I had proposed to Kimberly. Dude, I don't know. I very pink faced ran between my dad's legs and, you know, squeezed his knees around my head. So, I think it was left unresolved. So I'll stay happily married where I am now. And, I'm sure our paths will cross one day. And if she doesn't have the ring, I'll act offended.
And you know what? It would be amazing if she actually remembers. She'd be like, "I remember you the day at the hospital."
Oh yeah. I remember you. 4.5 feet ago with no beard and, you know, "Can you remove your glasses for me?" "Oh yeah, I remember those eyes."
Oh man.
You
definitely got to act out one of my childhood dreams, because I think like a lot of people, we all had our like show crushes.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool, man.
Okay. Yeah. So I was just going to, another funny, add into there was I met them in two separate points. One, I met the first group of them at their studio in LA, and then they had another signing at Canada's Wonderland, which is close to where, it's an amusement park close to where I grew up. Again, at the time in the 90s, you know, there was white superheroes and there was black superheroes, very few black superheroes, but there was still like, there was a divide for like the mixed individual, right? Where it's like, you're cool with everybody, but there's still no mixed representation. And so at the time, you know, Zach was like the coolest dude on TV for me, right? And when I met him at Wonderland, everybody else, "Oh, it's nice to meet you. Oh, nice to meet you. Can I have your autograph?" And then like, I walked up to Zach, chopped my teeth in. "What's up, brother?" You know, like 7-year-old kid walking up this guy, and it was everybody had a good laugh. So I think the same thing where I've actually worked a few conventions with him and Zach Austin Reese in the same building. But like Same. I don't know. You guys know now when you're at the convention, your mind is on selling books, not, you know, paying $80 for an autograph.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not. Okay. All right. Let's talk character design then, because of course, Power Rangers, a huge influence here. How did that factor into things like the suit designs or the monster designs?
In terms of like the suit design, so I am admittedly a sneakerhead. So I wanted to keep it like just super easy and super clean. I like me some white Air Force Ones or some white Jordans, you know? So like, I thought like, obviously the White Cell Squadron is like, it says it all. And then like the characters underneath, let me flip to a reference page here. You know, I've created a very like ethno-diverse cast so that, you know, it's not like the helmets come off and it is what you expect it to be or anything, because that's obviously a sensitive point. But in terms of the costume design, I just thought about like keeping it super clean, super athletic, light armor, like gold accents, just like something where stylistically, like, you know, any comic book artist or illustrator can pick it up and draw their version of it. And even if it's off a little bit, it still just looks super fly. You know, the helmet is like super basic. I even have an initiative called the Identify Yourself program. And it's, I just open up the template for the helmet and give kids an opportunity and adults an opportunity to draw their own mask and kind of, you know, submit it to the squadron. And it's just about being accessible and open, you know, like the Power Rangers costumes got wicked crazy as the years went on. There's stripes across and lightning bolts and, you know, dinosaur chomping on half the bodies. So, you know, I think that just keeping the White Cell Squadron outfit super simple, super clean, really fun. The giant robots kind of Gundam influenced, and the big monsters are just a matter of, you know, calling on the love of kaijus and, you know, some are super goofy, some are super gnarly looking. You know, just exploring all styles, you know, tattooing for 15 years. I've drawn my fair share of like Japanese style stuff. So the Irizumi tattoo artwork and, you know, even that kind of imagery, the big flowy monsters and stuff, like it's kind of infinite, right? Like all you have to do is start the story, create the action and then tie it up, you know, however you want. And, you know, the heavy stuff will come, but for the first few books, it's just going to be light and fun and easy for kids to fall in love with.
All right. Well, with that in mind, let's talk about issue 2. What can folks expect in issue 2?
So in issue 2, they can expect bigger action, a little bit more of a look into the big bad Emperor Lamora, and kind of what the base is all about. And you know, again, you meet another bad guy. So the lieutenant is Malagrox to Emperor Lamora. Malagrox is the gentleman, the creature, whatever you want to call him, that caused all the calamity in the first issue. In the second issue, you meet Big Bad Busy Boss B, and he's kind of a running joke about, you know, power tools and all the stuff they kind of have to work with for the day job. And you know, same thing, he just turns into a great big monster. You get a cool change of scenery where they go from a city like fighting on buildings to fighting on like a adventure wharf kind of thing where it's like a big fairground. You know, and just open it up for big epic scenery. I've got one page that anytime people look through the book, they send me the screenshots like that's so dope, you know. And like and that's kind of what I went for this one, is more full page spreads and big action moments.
Enjoying the podcast? Get even more of the content you love from artists around the world on Citywide Bites. Experience the show live on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, only on Instagram. With our interactive short-form interview series, you can ask your questions and be a part of the action. Hosted by Max Bowen.
So what is the take-home message that you're looking for to pass down to your readers as they go ahead and they read through the series?
It's the building of a I can do this attitude. There's a portion in the second issue where, you know, there's a giant monster that's about to crush a lighthouse. And there's a little dude drinking bubble tea and like his caretaker's trying to pull him away from it. And he infers the fact that like he just went through 24 months or 24 weeks of treatment and, sorry, 24 months of treatment. And, you know, damn it, he's going to enjoy every single drop of his chocolate mint blueberry triple tapioca bubble tea because it's the first thing that he's tasted in, you know, 6 months or whatever. And so I want people to take home a feeling of being appreciated, understood, reached, and encouraged to continue facing any adversity, you know, head on with positivity and a mighty attitude. And then there's also elements of not burning bridges, but recognizing the strengths in the people that you share confrontation with, so that because we live in a world where it's so combative that, you see somebody that's an adversary to you, and instead of looking at what their positive traits are, you lock in on it and you fight, and it, you know, becomes such a toxic environment that, there's aspects of this book that encourage admitting when you're wrong and, being brave enough to talk to your peers and apologize when needed. And also, again, there's, aspects of them building relationships with some of their enemies to see if, they can't utilize their strengths or benefit to humanity instead of a boon to it or a bane.
So I wanted to backtrack on the whole arc of the entire series, I guess is the way I'm frame this. So from inception, when an idea popped into your head to start jotting down the ideas of what you wanted to do to get this thing out to actual the point of releasing the first issue, how long did that take? What was the process like? Did you have, like a clear cut vision? Did you have to kind of go in and rewrite? Because everything that you've done here so far is, as you said earlier, complex yet, short and clean and straight to the point. So there had to have been a lot of, I would imagine, checks and balances and sort of like editing and revisiting stuff going on with this.
Honestly, man, I just make sure that nothing I draw looks phallic and that there's nothing that's so edgy that someone's going to like scratch their head and think, as a parent, I just run it through the filter. In terms of like scripting and stuff, I go Marvel method when I create my books. So I just storyboard it with pencils and then kind of write on top of the action that I put down. I took a little bit more time on the second issue to run it past more editorial eyes, so I leaned on some friends from the Lesser Known Comics Collective that I'm proudly a member of, and that helped me, but it typically just came down to just like make this lettering a little bit cleaner and like simplify these sentence formats. I've got a pretty clear image of just like wanting to, build action, calm it down, and then explode, and then finalize. So it's I follow a pretty standard, personal path, and just make sure that by the time it's done, it's just looks really good,
Yeah, awesome. And I understand reading up on your site there that the you decided not to do a Kickstarter campaign for this. How come?
That's correct. Kickstarter fatigue is a real thing. And I don't know if it's that I'm so close because I'm such an active member of the indie comics community, but like there's so many, you guys know, like there's so many Kickstarters to try to track, and you want to contribute to everybody. And like this year I became a super backer, because I tried to make sure that I was there for all my homies and like even the people I don't know, even if I can contribute without a reward, like I still did my best to stay active and help encourage the creation of projects. I think what happened was as I was building up my Kickstarter campaign for issue two, I started dreading the whole month, and it was taking away from my creation of the other projects that I have on the go. I was in the sauna one night at the gym, and it was just like, you can change your mind. It's okay to like to not do something that people expect you to do if it's not good for you. I've really been embracing the philosophy of being an independent professional. And at some point, like the crowdfunding campaigns are great, but there's delay times in how long it takes to get the money, how long it takes to fulfill. At some point, I think that it's really important for you to take that step forward, rely on the public that like the following that you're building, and just say like, my books are available. They're for sale. They do really good in public, but now you can get them here. And I just think being accountable for, you know, handling yourself independent of any crowdfunding platforms speaks to a level of legitimacy and, you know, permanence. Like I feel like the Kickstarter, when the Kickstarter wraps, people are like, well, that's cool. Maybe I'll get my books. Maybe I won't. Most of the time you do, but you know, there's a little bit more now where it's like, hey, go check out my website. You can get all my stuff here. You can message me directly if you have any issues. And I just think that there's something about, you know, really hawking my wares more independently of a platform that, quite frankly, like, you know, one of my big moral dilemmas with it is that, you know, you go to click Super Wicked and, like, you know, my all ages campaign is there. And then right after it is like Super Wicked, Not Safe for Work, Vor drama about, you know, robot vampire zombie pinups smashing their way through corporate America, you know. And it's just like, there's like an apples and aardvarks thing here where I just, like, I don't want to be stacked on the same shelf as somebody that's, like, you know, just throwing whatever their discrepancies are to the public, which is cool. But it's like, it's tough to see a major publisher go to an indie comic, like a indie heavy crowdfunding campaign, and then, like, you know, this dude's very successful life is, you know, career is at, like, their campaign is at like $500,000, you know, with like 3,000 backers or whatever, and like your book is sitting there staggering at the middleway point. And it's just like, it's very defeating for the people that put their soul into it, and then they don't have the support of the, you know, the ad agencies and stuff like that to help drive it through. So I just think that, like, from you know, from a mental health standpoint, like, I just don't want to promote a platform that takes 10% for burying the people that are working their hardest, you know, instead of seeking that projects we love badge. I just want you to love my project because you love what I'm creating, and I don't need a little stamp to prove that.
There you go. Yeah, I really like that. I like that. So this comic is not just one that you can buy, but I know that you're also working with comics for kids to get this out to various to get this out to various children's hospitals. How has that come along so far?
Yeah, so it's been really cool. Mark Bernal from Less Known Comics put me in touch with Mark Weiss, the gentleman that started Comic Books for Kids. And so over a couple phone calls, you know, we got to know each other, and then, you know, we kind of came to the arrangement that, like, every 75 books of anything that I can get to him, he packs it into, like, he puts one book into a case and sends it out quarterly to wherever it's got to go. And, you know, we discussed that as the strategy, because it's more important for, like, that one book to reach one special set of hands than for 25 copies of my books that cost X to print sitting, you know, under somebody's desk and collecting dust for however many months until they just kind of, like, reluctantly hand them out to everybody that wants them. So it's a really cool relationship that we've developed so far. So far I've gotten them, I believe, 100 issues of White Cell Squadron 1 and 100 coloring books. And then on my end, I've done some, you know, a lot of phone calls to try to get to hospitals near me, and developed some really strong relationships with, there's a hospital in Toronto called Holland Bloorview, and it's a children's rehabilitation center. So I got them a stack of books, and I got to participate in their holiday market. You know, my kids, I have two sons, and obviously they've got, you know, frequent flyer miles with broken arms at this point. So I dropped books off to the fracture clinic there as a thank you for, you know, everything that they've done for me. And it's just really cool, man. It's been really cool getting to the places that, you know, gave so much to me. Obviously I have higher, like, higher points that I want to reach in terms of getting my books to sick kids and, you know, more children's cancer centers. But the cool part about working with Comic Books for Kids is they already have a lot of ins at these institutions, and that's really helping just even get my foot through the door in a lot of the hospitals that I want to get to.
Excellent. Now, as you mentioned earlier, these characters are based in part on the medical professionals who helped you as a kid. The names, in fact, are actually combinations of the different doctors' names. Curious about who these characters are, and did the doctors, did their personalities or what have you, kind of influence the characters at all?
I think a little bit of the personalities in terms of like how I would imagine, you know, but like you're dealing with people that I knew when I was 6 years old and stuff, or even older. And like, you know, sometimes medicine is such a transactional thing that like you think you know somebody, but is it just their work face or whatever? So I go with like what my perception of that individual is. I tweak some of the names and stuff to fit the characters a little bit, but you know, like Marcus Green is the captain of the squadron. He's named in honor of Dr. Mark Greenberg, who was my oncologist as a child. And one of the like really cool things was reaching out to these medical professionals and saying like, hey, you know, I might have seen you 12 times over the course of my life, but I've named you after a character in my book, and you know, how can I get you copies of it? So one of those interactions led to my neuro-ophthalmologist, who actually found my tumor in 1994 by looking through my eyes. He came to the book launch that I had in the hometown, like the town that I grew up in. So it was really cool. Like, it's cool seeing, you know, an older gentleman walk in that, like, the last time I saw, I was looking up to him, you know, and all of a sudden he comes in and big warm smile that hasn't changed. And so, you know, the names are definitely the most, like, the highest honor that I can give these characters. But some of them are, you know, if they're doctors that are males, some of them are females, and, you know, combo platter of a whole bunch of stuff.
That's so cool, man. I really like that, especially that you actually got to meet one of them too, that they actually like remembered you.
A few of them. Yeah. It's really cool.
Excellent, man.
Just to roll on that quick, when I got to sit down with Dr. Greenberg, it was over a coffee and a tea, and, you know, it led to a much deeper conversation of how he felt. You know, this is a gentleman who's been practicing medicine since the 70s. And you know, it was really cool to get the perspective of, at the time, a 79-year-old, career practitioner who explained all the evolutions of medical technology that he saw, and, the highs and the lows of his career. So it's really cool. I feel like it really unlocked a level of maturity and understanding a little bit deeper, like how much these practitioners really care about everything that they do for their patients.
Absolutely. So we have talked, of course, good guys, we talked about monsters. We gotta talk minions, though. Anything based on Power Rangers is gonna have minions. In this case, these are called the Woolly Galoobers, which is such a great name for like any kind of like bad guy cannon fodder. What are these things? Yeah. Where do they come from?
Yeah. So the origin of the Woolly Galoober is when we were kids. We'd go to my grandma's place, and she had cats. We're all allergic to it. So we'd drive a half hour to get to grandma's house, and then we'd last 10 minutes because me and my sisters would have allergy attacks, right? But that would come with, like, you know, when your eyes get all red and you get like the gunk in the corner of your eyes. It was like this mixture of like mucus, spit, tear, and cat hair. And my mom used to use her nails to like dig them out of the corner of your eyes. And, like, the whole time you're screaming, she's like, I gotta get those Woolly Galoobers, you know? And so, like, all I could think of when I was drawing these like weird one-eyed creatures, just make them look again, I used to get these nosebleeds as a kid as a result of the medication that I would take, and they'd come out with these great big stringy like blood clots that just look like my body, like look like symbiote. And so when I was drawing the Woolly Galoobers, I just thought about like irritating, like slippery, nasty creatures, you know, and like, just again, keep them simple. Like, some of them you can upgrade and make them cooler and stuff. But it's just like, again, just real easy character design that is fun to see get, you know, whooped on.
Okay, Curtis, take away, man. I think I go throw up in a corner. Hang on a second. Be right back.
Don't be so dramatic.
Max, you okay? Max, you still with us?
I'm good.
You there?
Just keep it going, man. Keep it going. Give me a second. Okay. All right. I'm back. All right. So we are coming down to the end of this conversation, Doug, but where is this series going? Like, what's the end point for this thing?
I don't really have an end point. I'm going to chill on like pushing it much farther right now. Just focus on moving the first two books in the full volume so I can try to get a big stockpile printed so I can continue my mission of distribution. In the meantime, I'm working on part 3 of Chiasm. I've got a project with a YouTube channel that's designed to empower the use of blind canes in children, you know, to eliminate cane shame. You know, I've done some recent work in on album covers and stuff for some artists. So I'm starting to like really experience the benefits of the hard hustle paying off. And so I'm just going to chill on the White Cell Squadron. I think two books is a really good point to like maybe take to a major publisher and see if it's something they want to distribute for me. You know, as it moves forward, like, you know, I've got plans to turn the MRI into the MRD, you know, instead of the Interceptor, it's the Destroyer, and just like continue to empower kids to like, you know, Omar, are you ready for your MRI? It's like, nah, baby, it's the MRX today, you know, and like, continue developing like really strong points of visual, you know, empowerment. And like, what the heck, like if I come up with another cool monster, maybe that's where I start writing the next two issues. But, you know, I'm very cautious of like when I do start the issues, I put a little spoiler section in at the end of it, if it's got a hit cliffhanger, in case somebody reading it is potentially limited on time. So, you know, I in the theme of just making it fun for everybody, it's just making it something where people are going to know how it's going to end regardless. So we're going to go to the cosmos. We're going to come back to the earth. You know, we'll go really small. We'll go really big. You know, I even have like that writer in mind where I was figuring out how can I tie the White Cell to the Chiasm universe, you know? And so I've got a plan for that. So at some point you can cross over some fun characters and, you know, just what the hell, man? Like it's my world, right? Like I'm going to play with it.
Exactly. Like this I think is like one of the best parts of having your own comic lines is that, you know what?
Yeah.
Do whatever the hell you want. There are literally no rules. But of course, big part of what you do is you got to get that hustle. You got to get out there and meet the people. So put it out there. Upcoming con appearances. What can we see?
All right. I have a busy year. Busy for an indie creator, I think. On May 2-4 weekend, I will be at the Geekdom Con in Philly, in the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center. So myself and Mark Bernal are going to be there. Coming back to Canada on May 31st, I'll be at an art show put on by Raw Artist Canada. And then mid-June, another show back in Toronto, a little closer to me. End of June, I'm at Nickel City Comic Con in Buffalo. Incredible show. Had a lot of fun with it last year. Then August, I am at VonCon. It's a one-day show near me. Really cool promoter. Then I'm heading out to Terrificon in Connecticut, where I'll be working at the in the podcast and cosplay section with the gentleman from the YouTube channel that I'm working with. And then after Terrificon, the next week, I'll be at Canada Fan Expo in Toronto with a four-day show there. And in September, I'm going to Edmonton. So I'll be a little bit here, a little bit there. And, you know, and if anything else pops up, then I'm going to take my opportunity on there too.
Oh, definitely. And for the folks at home, if you want to learn more about this great creator and, of course, check the con appearances so you can go there and meet him, you go to crosseyecomics.com. Everything is there. Follow his socials, of course, get his comics, support a wonderful cause. And Dougman, great talking about this thing. I definitely look forward to the next conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. It was nice to touch base with you both.
All right. Well, that brings this episode to a close. Thanks, you guys, for listening. Curtis, thanks again for joining me, and we'll see everyone next time.
Bye.
Keep them crossed.
And with that, we bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. You can catch this and all your favorite episodes on your favorite podcast platform, and new episodes are added every week, as well as on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. You get at me at citywidemax@yahoo.com if you want to suggest a guest, submit your music, or just drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.